All right, so I'm a member of the Shoes team, and there's been a bunch of talks by the Shoes team already. So I'm gonna spend my time specifically talking about one potential systematic in the Hubble constant that has been the subject of a number of papers saying that the Hubble constant should be lower. So I'm gonna talk about how the Shoes team is accounting for the relationship between measured supernova distances and their host galaxies, how we accounted for that in RESET-ALL 2016, how we're going to account for it in the next analysis, and hopefully I'll convince you that we have things under control. We'll see. So this is another version of a plot that has been seen a whole lot. And so I'll start at least with step two, because that's what I'm going to be talking about today, where Cepheids are used to calibrate type 1a supernovae. And so this is the 19 galaxies that were in RESET-ALL 2016, 19 supernova hosts, supernovae in Cepheid calibrators. And for the next analysis, we're going to double this number. And the next step that's important that I'm going to talk about is the Hubble flow sample, where we compare type 1a supernova distances to our cosmological model and actually measure the Hubble constant. And so this has a lot more supernovae. It has about 200 with a foundation survey, which I'll talk about momentarily. We're trying to quadruple that number. And one more time, this plot, I'll put all three steps together, going all the way from geometry out to the Hubble flow. And I just want to highlight a couple things. The first is that, as Adam mentioned at the very beginning of the conference, this is a discrepancy that's about 0.18 magnitude. So it's a fairly large discrepancy in one or more of these steps that would have to be wrong to match Planck. And a couple of these steps that I feel like are unlikely to be the cause, one of them is the independent geometric distance anchors, because we have multiple independent distance anchors here. The other one that's maybe a little more counterintuitive, I feel like the Hubble flow sample cannot be very wrong. Because if you change the Hubble flow, especially by an amount that would account for this H-naught tension, it's going to be really hard to get dark energy as a cosmological constant, which is not to say dark energy is a cosmological constant, but if you're fixing a systematic error by creating new physics, that's not exactly a very satisfying solution. So I'm pretty much going to be talking today about the interface between this rung of the ladder and this rung of the ladder, and how we account for biases between supernovae and Cepheid hosts and supernovae in the Hubble flow. And so this is a concern, I would say, that we work very hard to try and deal with, because there are selection effects in play, and the primary selection effect here is that type 1a supernovae have to be in star-forming galaxies to be calibrated by Cepheids. So these are just figures that show the cumulative fraction of supernovae, in blue the Cepheid calibrators in RESET-ALL 2016, in orange the Hubble flow sample from RESET-ALL 2016 as a function of host galaxy mass and host galaxy specific star formation rate. So you can see there's an offset of a little under a dex in host galaxy mass between these two samples, and an offset of a little bit more than a dex in the host galaxy specific star formation rate. So this is what I'm going to try and convince you we are not affected by. So, of course, we care about these observational biases because, as Dylan and Dan showed, the distances we measure from type 1a supernovae depend on their host galaxy properties. So we just saw this figure from Dylan, so I won't dwell on it, but supernovae in lower mass host galaxies have been shown for about 10 years now to be intrinsically fainter than supernovae in higher mass galaxies after shape and color correction by about 0.06 mags. So while showing this plot, I'll just stress again that the tension is about 0.18 mags. This is a known step that we correct for. It's a third that size. So you would hope that any correction to that correction would be significantly smaller than a third the size of the discrepancy with Planck. But we have to be concerned about this because it doesn't make any sense why a type 1a supernova would know anything about the mass of its host galaxy. So what it maybe makes sense that a supernova would know about is the metallicity of its progenitor stars, perhaps the ages of its progenitor system. That could have something to do with what the progenitor system is and its composition, or maybe the dust between the progenitor, between the supernova explosion and us, the observers. and these other things. This has become a little bit of a cottage industry in the last few years, looking for different effects, how supernova distances correlate with these effects, and these other things like star formation rate are basically kind of tracers of progenitor age or progenitor metallicity. And this is one such study from Roman et al, 2018. It just shows a Hubble residual step between supernovae in blue regions of their host galaxies and red regions of their host galaxies. This is about 0.09 mag. The size of the step is about half that for the actual LOSY sample that's used for H-naught. So the other aspect of this, I said this is locally blue and locally red regions, so people have started looking into what if global host galaxy properties aren't precise enough to correct supernova distances. So we care for, you know, this kind of simple-minded, what is H-naught, what is fundamental physics? We just care if we use the wrong step, how much is H-naught biased? Of course, we want to know everything we can about supernova progenitors, but this is kind of the end question, I think, for this conference. How much is H-naught biased, knowing that there's some uncertainty in type 1a physics? And so our team's usual approach has been to go out and increase the sample size and use the biggest sample size we can that's the most similar to previous to the H-naught analyses, and really beat down the statistical errors, try and measure as many of these host galaxy effects as we can, and try and see, you know, how much this is impacting us. And so the way we've done this recently is with the Foundation Supernova Survey. The Foundation Survey, it's a follow-up survey with a Pan-STARRS telescope, so we follow up events from ATLAS, ZTF, ASSASSIN, different surveys, mostly just untargeted surveys of the sky. We follow those up with Pan-STARRS. Pan-STARRS has an excellent photometric system that's calibrated to the millimag level. The analysis and data reduction pipelines are extremely well known. We've already used them to measure the dark energy equation of state, so we're very comfortable with those. And the survey is, we don't go out and select a set of galaxies before the survey begins to look for supernovae in, which is what most of the previous LOSY samples have done. So we're relatively unbiased to the types of host galaxies and the types of supernovae we're looking at. So this is a great thing to try and understand these kind of host galaxy relationships with. So we have a couple fairly recent papers. Our first data release, all the data is public, is in Foley et al, 2018. Mostly today I'm going to be talking about the host galaxy analysis we did, which was published, I think, last fall, something like that. Just accepted a couple weeks ago, we have a dark energy paper that I just have a slide from, or a figure from here, because I'm really excited about it. And Dan Skolnick is going to be leading our H-naught analysis, which he showed some early results for yesterday. And this isn't really a dark energy talk, but I'm very excited about the Foundation survey and about this result. So I'll just say with Foundation, we can combine a low redshift sample observed on Pan-STARRS to a high redshift sample observed on Pan-STARRS. So we have the same photometric system, the same analysis pipeline, the same telescope, and for the most part, the same survey selection properties. They're both untargeted surveys at low redshift and high redshift. So we have this really nice homogeneous sample for measuring dark energy, and it's also independent of this legacy LOSY sample, so it's kind of the first, it's really the first measurement that's independent of all these LOSY data from CFA and CSP that have been kind of assembled over the last, you know, 20, 30 years. Today I'm primarily going to talk about host galaxies. And so this is the paper that we published. So primarily we were focused on, do we need local information or is global information good enough? But we also looked very hard into the implications for the Hubble constant. And so already with the Foundation data, we combine that with previous low redshift data. You can double the size of the LOSY sample when you're looking for local and global effects. And you can look at all different properties. It's a LOSY sample again, so you're not really limited by the resolution of the instrument. By local properties, we looked at the properties of the galaxy within about 1.5 kiloparsec of the supernova location, so quite local. And also a number of different global properties, host galaxy mass, host galaxy color, kind of a proxy for specific star formation, really, and specific star formation rate directly. So these are a few SED fits to the Cepheid calibrator set. So just showing this is UGRZY photometry, and this is how we got at these properties. So there's one important thing that we did here that's kind of new in the last couple of years that I just want to emphasize. So because supernova shape and color, those correlate with host galaxy properties, and there are observational biases in the measurements of host galaxy shape and color. So the size of the host galaxy step that you're actually measuring depends on how you correct for these selection biases. So this is a little bit of a disclaimer. This is a bunch of different measurements from the literature, and they are measuring different properties. So this is local color. This is local specific star formation rate. This is kind of a proxy for local star formation rate. This is local age. So these are different things, but you notice that all of the measurements that don't correct for these observational biases yield larger steps than the studies that do, which include Pantheon, this host galaxy analysis that I'll talk a little bit more about, and Dylan's DES paper. And again, this is not exactly apples to apples, but if you look at the foundation plus medium deep survey sample specifically, we know that correcting for these biases typically reduces the size of the host galaxy step. So with foundation, just the exact same sample without bias corrections, and then with bias corrections, we're reducing the step by a factor of 2. So this is a really important correction, especially because it takes you from for the case of foundation, it takes you from one of these larger steps to something more like what the Shoes analysis is corrected for, which is about 0.06 mag for the host galaxy mass. That's backwards. So this is just a quick plot of our actual results from this paper. Two of the parameters we looked at, the local mass, again, that's just kind of an annulus around the supernova location in its host galaxy and measuring the stellar mass from that. And then the local U minus G color. So this is, for the color, this is nicely color-coded in that blue galaxies are blue and red regions of their galaxies are red. You can see that we did detect a significant step. It's about 0.06 to 0.07 magnitudes. So we did recover the fact that these local trends are detectable. And this is, because it's hard to read that last plot, this is what we actually measured for the steps. So we learned a couple things from this analysis. One is that the size of the local and global steps were almost identical. So we didn't see any evidence from this, really, that the local steps were more fundamental than the global steps. And you wouldn't necessarily expect them to be, because a lot of supernova progenitors are delayed. You know, those progenitors would know nothing about their local properties. It's only the prompt ones that maybe have some correlation with their local properties. And this is also, this kind of small difference between the local and global steps was also found by Kim et al. 2018, Roman et al. 2018, and Rose et al. 2019. Those are unaffiliated with our group. But I will say, you know, kind of complicating this nice story, just because steps are about the same size doesn't mean they're entirely the same information. So we did actually see some evidence that these were complementary. Even after correcting for a global mass step, we found a local mass step. So really where we found the combined steps were the best way to correct our sample. And then there was another thing that I'll briefly mention that was kind of a, you know, two sigma, really low two sigma result, so barely even a curiosity, that different samples, targeted versus untargeted samples, had different step sizes. So basically the samples where you pre-select a bunch of bright galaxies and you go out and look for supernovae in those galaxies, you might see a different step size in those galaxies. And that's probably telling us something about our supernova model. Like maybe there are some deficiencies in the model. It's not exactly unbiased in the training set. So that's something to keep in mind, that when you can match up your samples, when you can match up your Cepheid calibrator sample to your Hubble flow sample, you should do that as best you can. So getting to the heart of the matter, you know, forgetting about all this interesting supernova physics stuff, how much is H0 actually biased? So this is a really nice equation from Mikhail Rigaud that shows basically how these supernova host galaxy biases translate into a Hubble constant bias. So basically what you have is you have the fraction of You have the fraction of some type of supernova in the Hubble flow, say supernovae in high-mass host galaxies, minus the fraction of those supernovae in the calibrator sample, and then you multiply by your step size. So this is pretty straightforward. And so just kind of for a nominal example, say for example, in your Cepheid calibrator sample, every galaxy was star-forming, and there's a step that depends on global star formation. So then, in your Hubble flow sample, you probably have about 50% of those ballpark are in star-forming galaxies, and in your Cepheid sample, 100% are in star-forming galaxies. So basically, you get this adjustment to the Hubble constant that's about half the size of the step. So what that means is you're no longer, you don't need a step that's 0.18 mags, you need a step that's 0.36 mags, or like four times the dispersion of the type 1a supernova population to explain this discrepancy between between Planck and local measurements. So again, this is really hard to do, so it should come as no surprise that when we actually tried to figure out the bias in the Hubble constant, we found low biases, because we measured steps that were just about 0.06, 0.07 magnitudes, and of course, the Schuss analysis already corrected for the host galaxy mass step. So we removed that step, added in a new step. And so these are three results from our paper, which are just different steps. This is a local specific star formation rate step, a local mass step, a local color step. And then the orange bar is from Rose et al. 2019. That's unaffiliated with our group. There are just a couple of details about this. The real upper limit that they quoted in their paper was delta H naught is 1.3 kilometers per second. I have official written permission from Ben to say the upper limit is more like 1 kilometer per second because they didn't take into account a Schuss mass correction. And really, I think our group would probably say that the Schuss mass correction, if you account for that, it tends to make the Hubble constant step even smaller than this. But that's not totally for sure. And again, these steps are all a fraction of the Rees et al. 2018 uncertainty budget. I haven't updated to 2019 yet, but ballpark, that's the idea. So we expect that whichever of these steps is truly correct, or none of them, it's not going to affect the Hubble constant very much. And again, full disclosure, this largest host galaxy step that I showed earlier from Rigaud et al. 2018, he has a different view. That step is so large that it actually could significantly bias the Hubble constant. We have a couple disagreements with that measurement that I'm happy to talk about, but that is kind of, for another view, see Rigaud et al. 2018, and that's kind of a more significant bias to H naught if the true step is 0.16 magnitudes. But there are two ways to go about this. So if I just go back to this equation really fast, the two ways to approach this problem are to either try and look at these different step sizes that we have here and see what effect they have on H naught. The other way to do things is to make this term equal to zero. So you try to have, if you have only star-forming galaxies in your calibrators, you try to have only star-forming galaxies in your Hubble flow sample. So that's the other approach that we took in Rees et al. 2016 as part of the analysis variance. Adam, I think, mentioned this on Monday, but we restricted our analysis to only Hubble flow supernovae in spiral hosts and only Hubble flow supernovae in locally star-forming hosts. And you can see that it did not affect the measurement of the Hubble constant. So it really had no impact. So we have not seen in our analyses that were biased because of this mismatch between the calibrator and Hubble flow sample. If you don't believe that, though, I have good news for the next analysis. This is the first plot that I showed, cumulative fraction of supernovae as a function of host galaxy properties. So skipping ahead to what we're going to have for the next measurement, where we have 38 Cepheid calibrators instead of 19, even if we don't do anything else, we see that these samples already match up much better. The green is our new Cepheid calibrators. The red is the new foundation sample. And in terms of host galaxy mass, these samples actually line up really, really well. And in specific star formation rate, they don't line up as well. But still, it's closer. So if we don't see some large shift in the Hubble constant with this new analysis, I would say that's strong evidence that that we're not really affected by this bias. And then, of course, on top of that, we're doing a second thing, which is that in the Hubble flow, we're only going to use galaxies where we think Cepheids could be found. And so that should really make us insensitive if we're selecting our calibrator and Hubble flow sample in the same way. And there's one more thing. The final thing is that Foundation is going to get spectra of every host galaxy at the supernova location. So we're going to get much more fine-grained information about the stellar populations near the location of the supernova progenitor. So that's how we're tackling this problem for the next analysis. And so we are definitely very concerned about this, but we really haven't seen a way to get a bias on H-naught that's more than like half a kilometer per second per megaparsec. And we have ways to further reduce this potential systematic in the next analysis. Thanks.
Hey, Dave. Very nice talk. Okay, so can you go over the thing with Mikhail? So he sees these other effects, but he also sees a mass step that's 3 times bigger than anyone sees. So
yeah.
What's going on?
So I was a little reluctant to bring everybody into like the weeds of supernova analyses, and in fact I was hoping Dylan would take it on to show this plot, but I'm ready. So these are mass steps that we've measured from different supernova samples as a function of the scatter of the supernova population. Whoops. So Mikhail, of course, will give you a very different answer if you ask why his mass step is higher and why his total step is higher. But one of the things that that concerns me about that very large step measurement is the fact that their mass step measurement is much higher than any of these others. So I find that a little bit concerning. You know, if your mass step just coincidentally happens to be higher, or if there's some difference in selection effects that you're not fully taking into account, maybe it's influencing the other step too. And so, but I would say, you know, this doesn't really look great for us, right? I guess if you take these like lower 4 points, which are all bias corrected for shape and color in the same way, like maybe it's only chi-squared of a little more than 1, but these kind of sample-to-sample inconsistencies must mean that there's something we're missing about modeling supernovae. So we're gonna keep our eye on that.
So it's a little difficult to do it at lower redshift because you have to use maybe get ultraviolet information, or the galaxies are really big, and then you have to decide you correct it to the middle of the galaxy like you're doing at high redshift. Can you talk a little bit about that?
To figure out the mass
of the galaxy. Because, I mean, people are saying, oh, here's a mass step. But people are determining masses of galaxies in different ways, on different surveys.
Yeah.
And that may matter.
Yeah, yeah. We try to be very self-consistent, but of course, redshift is a thing. The nice thing is for all these LOSY galaxies, we have Pan-STARRS Y-band, which helps you probe, you know, the stellar mass of all these redder stars. So we think, you know, we think that's fairly robust, and we have good SED fits. We also have STSS U-band for a lot of these things. It's definitely one of those things where, you know, in supernova distance measurements, you really care about these millimag-level systematics, and for host galaxy, you know, you kind of care within a couple tenths of a dex, so we're less sensitive to some of those systematics. But for sure, we've looked at, you know, measuring with SDS U-band. We've done a number of these measurements with Galax as well in the past, but I don't specifically remember those results off the top of my head.
Dave, very nice talk. So let me understand this then. So you take the sample, the low redshift sample that you used to measure the Hubble constant, and you correct for the mass step, okay? Then you look for evidence of any of these other steps remaining, and you find less than 3 sigma evidence, maybe the local mass one. That alone, if it was true, would change the Hubble constant by like 0.3.
That's correct.
Okay. So then,
I mean, we kind of do it both ways. You know, okay. You can look for the steps both before and after the global mass, nominal mass correction.
So there's, but things like local specific star formation, there's no evidence of any steps in the data set we have.
No, you would have to, if your prior was that local specific star formation rate makes way more sense than local mass, then you could say there's evidence. But then that evidence would be
like a 0.3 shift in the Hubble constant.
Yeah.
So what I understand about this is this supernova factory data set that has this very large step is not used in the analysis for the Hubble constant. So why is it relevant? I mean, why is it relevant to this discussion? If I mean, one could have any data set, and you don't know how it's collected, and it could have any effect in it, and you need to correct those effects, but if you're not using that data to measure cosmology, why is it relevant?
Yeah, so because there are these large sample-to-sample differences, I'd for sure advocate using a sample that's as similar to your analysis sample as you can. And, you know, we've seen issues in the past with steps in one sample aren't, you know, don't exist in another sample because there are different cuts or there are different selection effects,
but if you,
et cetera, et cetera.
I mean, if you had a sample and you were going to do cosmology with it, and somebody came along and said, hey, there's a certain effect in my sample, it has a step like this, and you didn't see it in your data, you couldn't just willy-nilly apply the step anyway in yours, otherwise you would just create this reverse step. I mean, you can't apply a step in data where it isn't present.
I totally agree with you. In fairness, I will make Mikhail's argument for him since he's not here.
We've heard his argument.
he would
and
say his measurement
speak
is
French
more
well
fundamental than our measurement. So he would say the way in which he's measuring specific star formation rate is better than the way in which we are measuring specific star formation rate.
Right.
So that would be the counter.
That goes to the strategy of using the same types of galaxies. Then there's no reason, if you don't use the local environment, that the global selection should know.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Because what they're saying is locally matters. Like, let's say it's Melissa.
Sure.
They're saying locally it matters, right? And there can be gradients, Melissa gradients in galaxies. So
I'm not saying there couldn't be a local effect. I'm just saying if you select the Cepheid calibrators as late-type galaxies and the Hubble flow as late-type galaxies without looking at the local, then you'll just get a random mix in both. There's no reason you'd have a bias.
I would say plan
Not
A.
But there's the Anderson set. So we can check the local H alpha, and if we do the late cut, it's just random.
So I would say plan A is to use all the data and, you know, correct for these host galaxy effects. Plan B, which actually is now our plan A, just because we want to be safe, is whatever, you should never letter your plans, is to just have the exact same selection in the calibrator sample and the Hubble flow sample. So we're just trying to say every galaxy in the Hubble flow sample has Cepheids, is basically what we want. So we're going to have Cepheid galaxies in the Hubble flow sample, Cepheid galaxies in the calibrator sample. It might not be 100% perfect, but if we do that and we don't see much of a shift, then it's hard to believe there's this really big step out there.
So I'm trying to figure out this plot. Do you just the x-axis?
That's so embarrassing.
Do you guys understand why the different surveys would be in the order they are, just for intrinsic scatter, like ignoring the y-axis? Is that understood?
No, I don't think it is. I'm gonna. There's clearly, you can't explain this without some issue in your supernova model, I think.
The funny thing about this plot is that you place the x-axis with year of survey, and it works just as well. So.
It's great. It's all under control.
It's kind of a time rating.
Just want to stress that the tension in the Hubble constant is bigger than these steps between different surveys.
Okay.
Much bigger.
So have you ever applied their methodology to find a step to your data set? I mean, it sounds...
The Rigaud et al. 2018
yeah.
methodology. So we can't, because they have an IFU survey that gets local H-alpha within like a kiloparsec of the supernova explosion. And unfortunately, their data isn't public. So that's definitely one of those things that's always been on our wish list, is like, we would love to take a deep dive into their data.
But not their data. I'm saying to your own data, can you approximate their methodology on your own data?
Doesn't seem to know whether we decided to observe Cepheids in the galaxies or not.
And you would expect that, you know, Galax measurements would be a good indication of local star formation rate as well. And of course, we have our backup plan with the Foundation survey, where we're getting spectra at the supernova location for that type of stuff.
Now let's thank